You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We get to share a wonderful missionary story again today. I love talking with missionary families, learning about how the Lord is using them to serve in His work around the world. And today we're heading to Puerto Rico to talk with the Roush family about how the Lord is using them to serve there. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on the KFUO website, kfuo.org. Joining us via Skype today, the Roush family, Pastor, the Reverend Matt Roush, serving as missionary, and his family joining us today as well. Welcome, Roush family.
Hey, hello. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thanks for spending some time with me. Let's introduce the Roush family before we get into all the stories of what led up to you coming there. So we have Pastor Roush. Good morning, Pastor Roush.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for getting your whole family together today. And introduce the rest of your family for us.
Okay, my wife, Heather.
Hey, everybody.
And our three children, Isabella, or Bella.
Hi.
And Paul.
Hello.
And Sophie.
Hi.
Well, thank you all for joining me today, and I guess you're sitting out of your regular studies for school, or maybe it's after school. Let's see. You're probably approaching the end of your school day about now. This was pre-recorded, so we're talking to the family in the afternoon, I guess early afternoon, correct?
Actually, late afternoon here. It's getting close to dinner time, actually. We're 2 hours ahead of St. Louis time right now.
All right, so close to dinner time.
I'm sure the kids would have been very excited to skip school, too.
So tell me a little bit about the community where you live and where you serve in Puerto Rico.
We live and serve in the city of Mayagüez on the western coast of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is actually a pretty small island. It's about 100 miles long and 35 miles wide. And Mayagüez is right in the middle of the western coast. It's a city of about 85, 90,000 people. It's one of the more industrial cities on the island. Puerto Rico, most people think beaches, tourist destinations, but Mayagüez is more of an industrial city. It has a big university. The island's brewery is right here in Mayagüez. But we're a short distance from all the beaches, the sun and surfing and all that stuff that people come down here for. But where we actually serve is in a real blue-collar community. With wonderful people. It's been great getting to know so many wonderfully kind, giving, loving people down here.
And how long have you been in Puerto Rico?
We arrived here just about 2 years ago.
So
we're just enough that we realize that, hey, we kind of know what we're doing here a little bit, but it's still really new. We still have so much to learn. We realize that every day.
Now, what led up to you? Well, let's talk about what led up to you considering the office of Holy Ministry. What led up to that? And then we'll talk to the fact of what led up to this mission as well.
Sure. I grew up in the LCMS at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Kingsford, Michigan, Upper Peninsula of Michigan. My grandfather was the pastor there when I was young. And he was actually the one who planted the idea in my head when I was about 12 or 13 years old that I should one day consider being a pastor. So it was something I really just had in the back of my mind throughout high school, college, and then about halfway through college. I actually did my undergrad at your underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. So that was really cool to hear that they're underwriting the program. I was about halfway through my studies at Concordia in Mequon, Wisconsin, when just through getting to know some of the other students that were actually in the pastoral ministry program, also preparing for seminary, I decided to go ahead and enroll in seminary, and that's what I did. And shortly thereafter, 4 years after college, I graduated from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and was ordained, and we went off to our first church in Garrison, Minnesota, in very, very frosty northern Minnesota, which is basically the opposite of where we are now.
Heather, tell me a little bit about your background.
My background. Well, my dad is a master chef and my mom is an LPN. And so my childhood actually was pretty eventful. We moved around a lot as kids. And my parents would take over rundown inns and hotels and we would flip them into 4- and 5-star properties. So we would move right into these hotels or inns. Some some great properties across the United States, mostly on the East Coast. And we would all work together as a family to, you know, recreate this property. So it was really interesting, a lot of fun. My mom's family is actually from northern Wisconsin, and that's how I got to meet Matt. Matt and I kind of actually grew up together. We whenever we were in between jobs, we would always move back to northern Wisconsin where my mom was from, and we would stay there for a while, and my dad would try to make a go of it at a supper club or something like that. But when we were there, we would go to Matt's grandpa's church, and that's how we met each other, and Matt and I kind of grew up with one another, knowing who each other was, but it wasn't until many years later that we actually got married and started a family, so...
And so you have experience in your family of origin of working together as a family on a common project, something, doing something together as a family, and setting some goals and really working toward that, and traveling and experiencing new places, it sounds like, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't until, actually, I never imagined that we would be in the mission field ever. But it's interesting how you look back on your past and you realize how God kind of has been preparing you your whole life for the things that he's called you to do. So it's interesting to see how that actually has come into play.
So when did you all first find out about, when did you first start thinking about serving as missionaries? When did this idea pop into your head?
It definitely wasn't right out of seminary. Definitely not in my first few years in the ministry. Serving as an international missionary, and actually I was kind of laughing about that because we're the not quite international missionaries because we're in a U.S. territory, but nonetheless, it's still a big change. I had really no desire to do anything out of the box. I just wanted to go back to the Midwest, to a small town like I'd grown up in, and serve a traditional parish, do the common things that we think of a pastor doing. But it wasn't until probably about 4 or 5 years ago when a couple friends of mine, people I had gotten to know in the ministry, had started applying to serve as missionaries themselves. And one of them actually was preparing himself, was going through the support raising process. And I talked to him quite a bit, and our former parish in Wisconsin, supported him with just incredible love and financial resources for what he was about to do. And talking to him and learning about what the process looked like and what the work might look like, it really kind of started to plant the idea in my head. The other thing, too, was you just hear the stories, not necessarily from Latin America or the Caribbean where we are, but all throughout the world, where people are just latching on to the Lutheran faith like thirsty people drinking water for the first time in a long time. And it's so inspiring to hear what a thirst there is to hear pure doctrine, to hear the pure confession of Christ. And that really became something I wanted to be a part of. And that really, really motivated me to go ahead and go through the application process and then see where that would lead us and see how God would work through that process of applying to become a missionary and see where that might lead us down the road.
Matt used to say that the wonderful thing is about this calling right now is that it's a great time to be a Lutheran. This is a great time in the world to be a Lutheran, and it's a great time to be able to share God's word through the Lutheran faith all over the world. It's exciting to be out here. And with all of the resources that we have, social media especially, you never feel like you're very far away.
Bella, how did mom and dad share with you that they were thinking about serving as international missionaries? And what did you think when they first shared the idea with you?
Well, at first I was a little bit nervous, but then I kind of warmed up to the idea after hearing about Puerto Rico, and learning about how thus cultures work and how we would be able to learn Spanish. And I really warmed up to the idea after a little while.
How about Paul and Sophia? Still there, Paul? What did you think when you first heard about the idea of serving as international missionaries?
Well, I remember one night we were at home in Wisconsin, and then my dad just kind of sat us down at the table and told us that he was considering becoming a missionary. And at first, that was kind of a scary idea because, you know, it's a totally new experience, and it was, you know, it makes you kind of nervous. But after, you know, hearing about what we would be doing and how it would all work and how it all come together, it really appealed to me, and it, you know, seemed like something that wouldn't be so bad after all.
Sophia?
Sophie, what do you think? Well, one of the things I really like about being a missionary in Puerto Rico is that at our church, we have a thing called Marionetas con una misión, which means puppets with a mission. And we do puppet shows in local parks of Puerto Rico, and we share the word of God by putting on puppet shows for children and their families.
You all have been in Puerto Rico for 2 years now. Tell me about getting settled in and meeting the people in your community, meeting your neighbors. Tell me a little bit about that. We'll start with you, Matt.
That's been a really interesting experience because you see so many ways that Puerto Rico is like the United States, just pretty much all the amenities and accessories and the things around you that you have in the U.S. you have here, the same kind of stores and restaurants, and quite a lot of people speak Spanish, especially those with college education or a number of people who have lived in the States. Or have family living in the States, they're fluent in English. So that's made it quite easy to get to know people. Still a little bit of a challenge where when there's people who don't understand Spanish, and you have to be really careful not to presume that someone else is going to speak English. So you always try to speak Spanish first. Mm-hmm. Try to remember, and there are times you have to remind yourself that you are in a different culture. That these people have had different experiences than you. They don't necessarily have the same presuppositions about life, about the world that you do, about the Christian faith. So it really takes a lot of patience and just reminding yourself to learn, to listen, to take that time to know people and
be humble.
Yeah, to be very humble. Yeah, that's Heather has it right. To be humble and realize that It's a long process to work with churches down here and start new churches and do this kind of work.
Was there any kind of groundwork that was done before you got there? Had we had any missionaries serving in that area prior to your arrival?
We had about 7 or 8 years before we arrived here. There had been kind of a lapse in the work here, and myself and another missionary who came down to Puerto Rico at the same time, we were sort of the restart of LCMS mission work in Puerto Rico. There was an existing congregation here in Mayagüez, and that's actually my primary work, is serving as the pastor of that congregation, Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, right here in Mayagüez. And they have a great little group of 20 or 30 people each Sunday who come together to gather around word and sacrament. And of course, we're working to do two things. First of all, get to know the people who are there and rebuild that relationship between missionaries and congregation. But then, of course, to reach out into our neighborhood around the church and into the community and lead others to God's gifts that are offered there.
Heather, tell me about settling in your community. Those first few weeks, those first few months, what that was like?
Wow. Well, overwhelming for sure. It was definitely an overwhelming time. You know, I think as the mom, you know, your job is really, especially in those first few weeks and first few months, truly, is really just to kind of facilitate making sure everybody else can get settled first. So I know, you know, at first it was just moving into the house and getting, you know, physically settled somewhere. And that was stressful, but it was exciting at the same time because it was all brand new. And then as that started to wear off, we got the kids, you know, enrolled in school and trying to make sure that they all get settled in school. And we've been very blessed. We have a great bilingual school that the kids go to here. It's about 5 minutes from our house. So, you know, getting them settled in those first few weeks, especially where it was stressful, but it was a really fulfilling time because we had so many people, especially from our congregation, who wrapped their arms around us and gave us great tips on how to maneuver traffic and shopping and all of the things that you have to do in order to get settled in. So we weren't alone, for sure.
Okay, you brought up two probably significant things that make a difference when you're learning about a new community: traffic and transportation, how to get around, and then also shopping. You know, the grocery stores and things like that. Tell me a little bit about your experience with those.
So, like Matt alluded to before, Puerto Rico and especially Mayaguez, in a lot of ways, resembles the United States. You know, a lot of the time, you can see familiar things around you. And so you think that it's going to be the same way that it is when you're in the States. But it's very much not like that. So we have a Sam's Club. We have a Kmart. We have a Walmart. We have all of those things. But when you to get there usually takes, I would say, at least double the time. Because even though Puerto Rico is a small island, it's very densely populated. And so there's a lot of traffic a lot of the time. So it does slow you down quite a bit. You have to be cautious when you're driving, especially at first, because there are some island rules. It's not quite the same as driving maybe in other Caribbean countries, but here there's some different ways of driving. It's not necessarily bad, but they don't drive exactly the same way as you do in the States. So we had to be cautious of that and learn what those, I guess, driving laws were.
That sort of unofficial etiquette of the road.
Well said. It's an unofficial etiquette of the road. that was good.
Can you give an example?
Example, if you're driving down the street and you want to turn left and there's a car coming towards you, it's very likely that that car will stop and flash their lights at you, meaning go ahead and turn in front of me, even though there's
all the traffic behind them will have to stop in order to let you go.
Right.
Yeah.
So getting used to that and then understanding that sometimes that won't happen. The weird thing is you kind of learn to depend on that. You're like, boy, it's going to take me forever to turn left here. Uh-huh. I hope someone lets me through really soon.
Well, or one of the things that's happened to us several times too is that, you know, Latin America in general is a very relational part of the world. So relationships are really important here. And you will see sometimes people will just stop right in the road because the person in the car next to them is someone they know. So they'll just stop in the midst of four lanes of traffic and have a conversation with the guy next to them. Or they'll pull over, you know, and get across. And then you'll see people pulled over on the side of the road, maybe on the wrong side of the road or however it most conveniently worked for them, because they saw someone that they wanted to talk to and they wanted to have, you know, some time with a friend or a family member. And so those are things that you wouldn't normally see in the States, but that once you find out about them, it's actually kind of endearing. So you start to understand why they do that. So, and then I would say shopping wise, you know, the lines are very long. You can't, even though you have Walmart, Sam's Club, you know, Kmart, you don't always find the things that you would normally find in the States. I know anytime someone comes to visit us here, we ask them to bring us chocolate chips because chocolate chips are really hard to find. If you do find them, they're usually in smaller packages and they're a lot more expensive. So there's little things like that. You know, it's comparable maybe to moving to a different state. If you don't have the things that are readily available to you, it's just you find different ways of doing things and different ways of making things. So,
Bella, tell me about your school and getting settled in your new school.
Well, I actually am doing online school out of a school in California called Orange Lutheran Online. So I'm actually not going to this bilingual school that my brother and sister are going to, but I am also learning Spanish. I'm in Spanish 3 right now, and next year I'll be in Spanish 4. So
very good. Yeah. And what year of school are you in?
I'm a junior this year, so I'm in 11th grade.
And she just got her driver's license here in Puerto Rico, which was a fun experience doing the whole getting your, they call it the aprendizaje. And it was actually really hard for her because all her friends back in Wisconsin got their permits when they turned 15. Here you can't get it until you turn 16, but then you have it for 6 months. Then after you turn 16 and a half, you can get your full license. So now she is on the streets of Puerto Rico, which terrifies me probably more than if we actually lived back in the States.
She does really well. She's an excellent driver. And I will throw in that she was supposed to just go into a practice lesson for her test, but ended up taking the test that day because her driver's instructor knew, or her lesson instructor knew the driving instructor. So she said that Bella was ready, and they took the test the same day, and she had to take it in Spanish, and that was amazing. So last minute, no preparation, she took her driver's test in Spanish and passed. So.
Congratulations, Bella.
Yeah.
And I'll pray for you, Mom and Dad. I'll pray for you. It's a new chapter in life. Paul, tell me about your school and getting settled in.
All right. Well, at first it was a little bit difficult. I mean, it's definitely a lot different here. I've noticed that the classes are definitely a little bit harder than they would be in the States. But even though the school is, you know, a bilingual school, there are still some moments where to explain something better, the teachers will speak Spanish to the rest of the class because they might not understand what's happening very well when it's being described in English. But that's not really too big of an issue. I've gotten to the point where I can, for the most part, figure out what everyone's talking about in Spanish. But yeah, it was definitely a difficult experience fitting in to the culture here in Puerto Rico, especially with schooling, because a lot of the things, the way people act is a lot different. Just the common things they say, like, can I borrow a pencil? They say, can you lend me a pencil? But one of the ways I was really able to fit in was through the school student council. In last year, I was fortunate enough to be elected onto the student council, so I could really fit in. I could really fit into to what was happening with all of my classmates and
get to know people better.
Yeah, get to know people better. Mm-hmm. So that was really great, and I'm really thankful for that experience.
And Paul, what grade are you in?
I'm in eighth grade.
Very good. And Sophie, how about you? Tell me about your school experience. What have you been learning in your school?
Well, in Spanish class last year, I took a class called SSL, which stands for Spanish Second Language, which was basically a special Spanish class for me and two of my other friends that I got to know at my school. But this year, I'm taking normal Spanish with the rest of my class because on certain days of the week, I am with a tutor, which was one of my former teachers from when I was in third grade, and it's really helped me through Spanish, and I am in fourth grade.
Very good.
And I have made two friends in SSL, and they're learning Spanish really well too. And I just think that we have a really great school that we go to.
Tell Andy where your friends are from.
Oh, I have one of the families that we're friends from. They're from Ireland, and they moved to Puerto Rico. And one of their kids is my age. And she was part of the Spanish second language class. We became really good friends when she came to our school.
And then the other friend is from Boston. Right?
Very good. Well, we have just about a minute left before we wrap up. Mom and Dad, how's Spanish coming along for you?
Español es bueno. It's coming pretty well. It's funny. I've been thinking a lot about that lately. Everyone in this family is really good at understanding people who speak in Spanish except for me. I am having the hardest time understanding when people talk to me. That being said, I'm the speaker in the family, which I suppose when you're a pastor is good, having to preach and teach. I can say pretty much anything I need to say, but I'm still struggling with learning. Probably every pastor needs to remember the importance of listening, and I'm still struggling with that.
And I'll say, too, that I'm really proud of Matt. We are all really proud of Matt because he's been preaching and teaching Bible study in Spanish now for well over a year. So he's been doing an excellent job learning the language. So he's not giving himself enough credit. I would say, yeah, I'm learning as well. I can say anything I need to say in present tense for the most part. I'm still working on my yesterdays and tomorrows. So, but it's great because here in Puerto Rico, it's awesome because Spanglish is real. So we can usually get by if you don't know a word in Spanish. You can usually fill in with it in English, and most everybody knows what you're trying to say. So.
Well, congratulations, Roosh family, on your language skills, developing your Spanish language skills. And how can we follow and keep up with what's going on with the Roosh family and your mission in Puerto Rico?
We have a giving page and a biography page at the LCMS website. It's lcms.org/Roosh, R-U-E-S-C-H. And also, if you go on Facebook and just search for the Roosh's in Puerto Rico, you can find our page on there and you can follow us. And we put regular updates on there about what we're up to.
Very good. Well, thank you, Roosh family, for spending some time with me and learning all about your work in Puerto Rico and your new life as missionaries there. Congratulations on making it to 2 years, and God's blessings on the work that lies ahead.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Last year, Canada passed a sweeping law legalizing euthanasia, and one Canadian grandmother took an extra step to ensure she's not one of its growing number of victims. Christine Nagel went to a tattoo parlor and had the words, "Don't euthanize me," etched into her upper arm. Christine, who's a practicing Christian, opposes euthanasia and wants to live until God's ready to take her. Euthanasia is also a concern in America. Oregon patients Barbara Wagner and Randy Strope suffer from cancer, and their doctors recommended treatment, but the state health plan denied their request. But they reminded them of the option of suicide by drugs, which would be much less expensive. All the while, laws are quietly being put into place that take away a patient's right to treatment.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, this is Pastor Harrison. Let me tell you about something new and exciting. We call it Life Together, a monthly digital digest where I'll be sharing news and highlights from Synod publications and multimedia outlets. There'll be something for everyone. Each digest will be delivered to your inbox, showing how we live and work together to proclaim the gospel and bear Christ's mercy to one another in our congregations, communities, and the world. Please be sure to subscribe today. You'll be glad you did.
Does your church need help to discover its true mission? Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. It happens to all of us. At some point in our lives, we get distracted, confused, or maybe even burned out, and eventually we lose focus. So it's nice to know at times like these that you have a partner at LCEF. Our ministry support services can help your church clarify its mission so it enjoys sustained health and growth. Learn more at www.lcef.org.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is January 2017, and a great opportunity lies ahead for you if you are a Lutheran Young Adult. We've talked about Lutheran Young Adult Corps before. Joining me in studio today to help us talk about that, Juliana Schultz, Program Manager for Lutheran Young Adult Corps. Juliana, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for coming over to the studio today and making your way down here.
It's a long walk.
It is.
From upstairs.
Making your way over from your desk in the office, LCMS Office of National Mission Youth Ministry. What's going on in Lutheran Young Adult Corps? You've been working diligently on this for some time now.
It's been a process that God has blessed through several years now that we can finally say it's happening this year.
Awesome.
This year it is going to be a thing. So that's exciting for us.
You've been with us, what, 2 years?
A year and a half.
Year and a half now. And part of that time was ramping up to the National Youth Gathering. Mm-hmm. That was a big event. And I think you had a servant event or some other activities going on as well. So have you recovered from the National Youth Gathering?
Sort of. So the National Youth Gathering is this immense event. And then we got back and many of my teammates still were working diligently on closing the book for the gathering. And I was then panicking because we were getting applications out and we were finishing up our work with community partners. So it sort of ramped right back up for me as we prepared for summer of 2017. So I'm not sure it's ever a dull moment in the Office of National Mission. There doesn't appear to be a down season at all.
I really enjoyed walking through the office just like a couple of weeks before the National Youth Gathering, trying to just walk through very calmly and bring this sense of calm. And, you know, honestly, everybody was relatively calm. They put up a really good front. Everybody seemed really calm before
Sometimes
that.
Sometimes it's a hard to distinguish between calm and exhausted. But yes.
What is a Lutheran Young Adult and how do they make up a corps?
Right. So Lutheran Young Adult Corps is for a student or young people who are 18 to 26. So either they're coming out of high school, their high school experience, or they're coming perhaps out of their college experience. And they are looking for an opportunity to serve for a longer term than just maybe a week, and giving them an opportunity to serve, particularly in urban settings with other young adults, within a support system that we design, and with community partners that include both churches and campus ministries, recognized service organizations, and other community organizations. So
that's your very good elevator speech.
I know, I've gotten pretty good at it.
Your DCE training is very helpful.
It is.
So young adults are going to be serving either in a summer setting or a kind of a year-long setting. Is that correct?
Exactly. So they can go 10 weeks in the summer, particularly for those students who are looking for perhaps a summer opportunity to explore vocation or explore mission opportunities and service opportunities over the course of a summer, or it can be a fuller gap year experience. We have several of our applicants who are coming out of high school who are not sure what they want to do for college yet, not sure they want to really jump right back into an academic setting.
Or if college is even a good path for them.
Sure, absolutely. And this gives them an opportunity, a safe place for them, and a structure for them to come and to serve, to have some deliberate time to grow in faith and to have some life experience and to have a chance to explore, you know, what God may have next for them.
So what are some of the things you might do as a participant in Lutheran Young Adult Corps? What are some of the things in these urban settings that we might be doing? You mentioned campus ministry, parishes, other organizations you might be working with.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. We thought maybe we would expect to see just a certain two or three different kinds of jobs. And really, our community partners have become very innovative in how they're going to use these young adults. So every position is a little bit different. We see a lot of our community partners who are working to provide after-school programming and mentoring and support for students in a variety of different settings, whether those students are in a particular neighborhood or of a particular demographic that maybe wouldn't get that kind of support outside of a school setting, helping to keep them kind of on the right track. And then we have some that working with immigrants and refugees who are coming into the city, who, you know, those students who might need some extra help and tutoring and mentoring in those kinds of ways. We do have some that are connected to campus ministries. I'm going to be working with to help churches get engaged and get onto campuses and build relationships in order to connect them back to a local congregation. We have some that are going to be working with Camp Restore down in New Orleans and helping supervise volunteers that are coming in and help support those people who are coming in for a shorter term mission experience. And in fact, we are having conversations right now hoping that we can expand that to Camp Restore that opened in Baton Rouge. So doing some very intense on the ground work as they work through flood recovery as well. So there's a little bit of everything. We say, as we keep telling students, there's probably no skill set that will go unused. If you have it, we'll find a way to utilize it when you're working in young adult corps.
So with the 10-week program during the summer, the 10-week opportunities, where might some of those be happening? You mentioned Camp Restore being one of those.
Yeah, those are going to primarily happen in St. Louis and Boston. We'll have a couple of spots in New Orleans, and then those will be the three places that will have students in the 10-month program as well.
Oh, okay, so Boston,
St. Louis, and New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. That's ambitious for our first year.
It is. And we just figure if we're going to go in, we're going to go all in. And what's fantastic is, you know, every one of those places has incredibly supportive and encouraging people in their community partners, whether those are pastors who are there, and they're excited to supervise and to help these young people grow. We have city coordinators who are excited and engaged and are hoping to help those young people have a fantastic experience. And so it's been a blessing for me to be able to go to these places and kind of open up a door and say, hey, we want to provide some young adults to help you kind of share the gospel in your community and to help invigorate some part of your ministry, and how they've really embraced that and been encouraged by that. And I've gotten a chance to see the variety of different ways that our churches are getting out into their community and sharing the gospel.
What opportunities are still open? Where are there places where applications are still being accepted?
Yeah. So this is the fun part. Also the part that makes me the most nervous. Until the end of February, you can continue to apply for our 10-week program. And then until the end of March, you can apply for the 10-month program. So if you're interested in either of those, they are both still open. They both still have placements. But we wait till we have all of our applicants, and then we do our placement process.
Uh-huh. So it's not just a... So you work on placing them based on what the needs are and what their talents or skill set is?
Exactly. So we have this, you know, we have all of our applicants from our applications from our community partners. They tell us about themselves, what the skills are that they're looking for, the kinds of students that they're looking for. And then we turn around and look at all of the applicants that come in and what they are passionate about, how God has gifted them, and then we make that connection. So we're still in that application process. We're still getting applications in, and they can continue to get that in for 10 weeks for another month or 6 weeks or so, and then we'll be working diligently on getting those connected up with the right placement. So. Hmm.
Now, I take it you'll be visiting these cities as well.
Yes.
In the coming year to see how everything's coming along.
Yeah, I made a list on Southwest for sure. It's a lot of
you'll
travel.
You'll be flying a lot.
But it's good. We just have some amazing partners that we're working with, so that makes it easy. And technology allows for us to connect with community partners and with our participants over distance as well.
How does one go about applying for this year?
So they would go to lcms.org/YACORPS. And then right there at the top, it'll give you the application. It's a fairly short application to start out with. It looks a lot like a college application. You fill it out, you turn it in. And we do things like checking recommendations and doing a background check. And once those are completed, then we set up an interview where we'll Skype people in and we'll talk to them and get to know them a little bit and make sure that they're a good fit for the program and hear a little bit about what they're how they've been gifted and what they're passionate about. And then they'll also do kind of a theological.
That's part of the interview.
Yeah. Testing. We need to come up with a word for it. They're going to answer some questions about theology and not to eliminate anyone, because we don't want anybody to feel intimidated by that, but simply to make sure that we're putting the right people in the right placements. And once that's done, then we have all that information and we're able to kind of match them up with the right community partners.
Very good. So the application, lcms.org/YACORPS.
That is correct,
sir. YACOR. Mm-hmm. With a PS.
With a PS, but not an E.
Not an E, yes.
Right.
YACORPS. Very good. So go there to start the application process. Mm-hmm. When are applications due?
So 10-week applications are due by the end of February. The last day of February is the last day we can take them.
Time to hustle, people,
yes.
If you're thinking about doing that this
Absolutely.
Summer.
And then our 10-month applications are open till the end of March.
All right. So still.
We have a little bit of time, but still, within the next 6 to 8 weeks, we're really hoping we'll have all our applicants in so that we can work on the placement process.
So if you're a young adult listening to this and mm-hmm. thinking about this, now's the time to apply.
Yes.
If you have a young adult in your life who you think this might be a good opportunity for, as you mentioned earlier, someone who's thinking, I'm not sure what I want to do next. I know I want to serve. This might be one way that I could do that. Whether it's before going on to be a college student or trying to decide if you want to be a college student, or you've already been a college student and now I'm trying to decide what to do next, this might be a good step. Whether it's the 10 weeks during the summer or 10 months throughout the year. And either way, sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's...
Sounds hard, too, but...
It's hard, but fun in the best way.
It kind of reminds me of my experience working at camp during the summer. My wife and I met at Camp Luther Haven in Albion, Indiana. And those, I think it was about 10 weeks as well that we worked there. And when you work in that setting... You see someone at their strongest and at their weakest, you know, when they're most vulnerable, because you're just exhausted from all the work. And I picture this kind of that way too. You're going to be working very hard in all kinds of circumstances and sometimes extreme exhaustion, but also it's, I'm sure, very, very motivating, very encouraging, mm-hmm. because you see some of the greatest things, some of the neatest things we get to do, particularly related to the gospel, mm-hmm. and showing acts, in acts of mercy as well for our neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. And getting to know and getting to be a part of ministries that are ongoing and that have been ongoing for many years, and to be able to assist those lay people and the pastors and the other staff people who are there to be able to engage on a greater level in sharing the gospel. It's going to be, we have some great partners who are going to help. This is going to help them tremendously. So.
Anything else we need to know for the, either before applying or as we're considering applying, anything else we need to know as we prepare for the next year?
If you have questions, you can always email us at YACORPS, again, YACOR, at lcms.org. I'm always around to answer questions that you might have.
We can certainly, literally, she like lives here.
Yeah, pretty much. No, no, not true. Or you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at LutheranYACOR. And certainly, we just did a Facebook Live not that long ago, so you could go on our Facebook page and listen to me talk more extensively about the different partnerships that we have and what the application process looks like. So certainly, you can find us there.
Juliana, thank you so much for sharing about this opportunity. I'm excited to see the applicants, to hear about those who are applying and your lineup for this year. I can't wait. Hopefully you'll come back and share with us
Absolutely.
About the young adults who are going up for the 10 weeks this year and the 10 months as well. And seeing all of that young adult energy put to work for the sake of the gospel. Thanks so much, Juliana Schultz,
Thanks
Program Manager,
me.
Lutheran Young Adult Corps. We'll let you go back to your office and read those applications.
Sounds good.
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to hear from one of our favorite poets. Michelle Swope has some poetry to share with us today. Excited to have some time with her sharing some of her new poetry. She has a new book out. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this.
long-standing tradition at Worldwide KFUO is to broadcast two live worship services for those unable to attend or for those who may benefit from hearing God's Word online or KFUO. From Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville, Illinois, Senior Pastor John Schenk leads the worship service at 8 a.m. The live late service at 10:45 comes from Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri, where Reverend Dr. Kevin Golden is Senior Pastor. Hear the message of mercy and forgiveness during Sunday morning worship on Worldwide KFUO.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We like to address all aspects of faithful family life here. And, well, I try to be a well-rounded and cultural person, and that can include some fine poetry. And one of my favorite poets in studio today, Michelle Swope, has written a book and of poetry, a nice collection of poetry, shared some with us in the past, and has brought some to share with us again today. Michelle, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Hello, thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. I'm so glad that you made it to studio today. I know that it was a bit of a challenge with the weather and the traffic today, but I'm very glad that you made it here to share with us. Michelle, tell me, how long have you been writing poetry?
Well, I started with composing stuff when I was about two. I had a song that was kind of gibberish, but my parents really liked it a lot. And every time I sang it, it came out the same way.
So what is it about poetry that you enjoy? What does poetry do for you?
It's calming and it's fun to write. And it's, how would you put it?
Soothing?
Soothing, yes.
Tell me about this collection of poetry that you have. What's the name of your book?
Through Time's Looking Glass.
Very good. Now, what's the first selection you brought to share with us today?
The first selection is called Hush.
Very good.
Hush, little one, come, oh, unto me. Joy unceasing, sorrows leaving. Hush, little one, come closer to me. I sing thee the prayers of the faithful one's heart. Joy and peace may be thy delight.
When you sit down to write a poem such as this, such as Hush, is there something that prepares you? What prompts you to write a poem such as this?
Well, the whole thing's after I had done the song when I was about two, I was in this contest for poets in my community. However, it was kind of amusing but puzzling because people chose from the same family who apparently must have been better poets than I was at the time. And then there was this one guy who I really didn't understand as much. He was a kid. But I wrote poems about these different pictures, and what came to mind, and I wrote it down.
So you have pictures that come to mind, you write it down on paper?
Mm-hmm. I can be just about anywhere, and a poem will come doink into my mind, and then I won't put it down on paper. One funny time, I was out shoveling the driveway, and a poem came to mind, and, well, I had to drop what I was doing, go inside, and sit on the doormat and write down the poem.
So you just sat down right there where you were to write a poem. Do you like it when that happens? When a poem comes to you and you just sit down?
Sometimes it'll be at the middle of the night and I'm scurrying to write down the poem before it goes out in one ear and out the other. And it'll drive my brother and my dad bonkers.
Tell me about the next selection, next poem you've prepared for us today.
It's called The Gates. O Hannibal, the mother's cry is coming soon at hand. O Hannibal, by day or night, will cease to understand. Oh, Hannibal, the cry the children fear, for it means doom will soon be here. Hannibal ad portus will soon be the cry, forsooth you know why.
Now tell me more about this. Hannibal?
Yes, it's... There was, in old-fashioned Roman times, there was this very feared man called Hannibal. I forget his last name, but he was a Roman from a different kind of province. And he crossed some rivers and went through some countries, burning as he went and destructing the places. And so, in this, I chose to write about that because... It's not like he's in bad or anything. He just really was focused on what he wanted to do, which was gain world power.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you studying world history, Roman history at the time that you wrote this?
Yes. And the thing, Hannibal ad portus means Hannibal at the gates.
Very good. So what was it about this history that stood out for you that prompted you to write this?
Well, I've always liked history, not... town history, if you will, but history was my favorite subject for a long time in school. Then I started learning languages. I'm saying that I've gotten okay in Latin, and we're working on that at home, but my French is kind of deplorable. So
you don't write any sonnets in French?
No. I'm about the third lesson along, so.
Still in your early days.
Yeah.
You're the early part of your studies in French. Do you have another poem for us this morning?
Sure. I've got 5 poems total. Let's see. The next one is called The Dance of the Sillies. Where does the river of 100 livers beat for meat and for wheat? They talk to the moon and walk on a spoon and very much dance to the way.
Now, how did you first learn about poetry? Did you read other poets as you were learning to write poems like this? Because I hear meter, I hear a number of things.
Well, the way I kind of attribute this to studying poetry, I did that song about my special song that I composed when I was 2, wrote some poetry when I was 5. And then when I was 10. But what I really attribute my poems best to is, I'll tell you the story. It's about when I learned Shakespeare. Before, I had no clue about Shakespeare and what it was. And then one night when I was really young, about 6 maybe, I was not feeling that not good that night. My stomach was bothering me. My head was bothering me. So my dad scooped me up and took me down to the couch. And then he pulled what is now a disappeared book, but I have a recopy of it. It's called Romeo and Juliet. You know Shakespeare?
Yes.
And he's read to me the chapters, starting with, like all books should, the dramatis personae, or the cast list. Then we moved on to the chorus, first chorus, and he said, 2 houses, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona where we lay our scene, and so forth. Then we'd go to the first scene, which was between the Montague servants and the Capulet servants, and then it builds up with all the citizens, the 2 houses who were in grief, and we went on from there. Then we learned Hamlet, the Merchant of Venice, and Macbeth, and all Shakespeare's works. So then I really got to learn from my mom, who took a wide interest in this, and she started having little dining room and couch room learning about the plays and how they're in depth and what the meter is. And we also had little programs, if you will, where we would recite each character and we'd divide the characters up and say, okay, Michelle, you're Portia, you're so-and-so and so-and-so. Michael took a few hands, though he really disliked
your brother.
Yeah, my twin brother.
We have just about 2 minutes left. I'd like to, you have one more poem for us today, is that correct?
2 more,
okay.
Fun. This is a poem about me at my challenger baseball group. Three strikes, you're out. The inning's done. The game is won. Strategic feat, a simple test. All is laid to rest. Passed by summer, fall, and winter. The start of spring is near. We band together once more. It's plain as the diamonds. We all belong together. Rockets and bears and prickly pears don't have much in common. Lions together with sharks, what a lark. And jets? Blast them here, blast them there. Fill them up with air. You can be sure they won't run out of smiles or laughter. Hit that bat. Excuse me, hit that ball. Stay tuned for Zanny Times next year.
Now, did you recite poetry while you were playing ball?
No.
No. You stayed focused on the game.
Yeah. You had to because of where they keep you on the field.
Sure.
And the last one I have is called Merry Maiden. This one kind of has a tune to it, but I have for long since forgotten that one. My eyes and ears take thee at thy word, and for thy youth, joy will adorn thee evermore. O gentle maiden youth, thy glories may not tell of lips that speak, of cheeks that blush, of feet that dance upon the floor. Merrily we sing of tunes long ago, dancing merrily here and dancing to and fro. O gentle maiden youth, what times we all have had, but now 'tis time to be strict and march right into bed. Fiddlers play as fife and drums sound.
I think poetry is beautiful, but perhaps lost among young people today. It's perhaps not as common. What would you like our listeners, our young adults like you, to know about poetry? How can it, with just about a half a minute left, how has it made a difference for you?
It's made a big difference because, like I said in the interview, it's calming, it's soothing, and you can follow it like that and be comforted. Because, you know, all is at peace. We don't have to worry, like, what will I do tomorrow? Whatever.
Michelle, where can we find your book?
Amazon.com. You just type in my name, Michelle Swope, and it should pull it up.
Michelle Swope, Through Time's Looking Glass. Thanks so much for being my guest today. One of my favorite poets. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you. It was very nice to meet you again.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, Studying God's Word with Pastor Whedon on Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.